This is the PBT Podcast, the most comprehensive and entertaining 30 minutes on the NBA anywhere. From insights to interviews, we've got you covered. Here are your hosts, Pro Basketball Talk's Kurt Helin and Eitan Shander.
We are back on another edition of the PBT Podcast, ProBasketballTalk.NBCSports.com, alongside Kurt Helin, Eitan Shander, as we have a lot of news just coming out at the time, really, this weekend of this podcast. We can't even get to the draft, the winners and losers, and why Philadelphia did what they did and other teams. It's Miami Heat with Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, all three are out. Correct me if I'm wrong. At the moment right now that we are recording this, Norris Cole is the only guy that has guaranteed money coming to him.
Right. There's some debate about exactly when Bosch is opting out. His agent says he hasn't done it yet, but look, Haslam and Wade and LeBron have opted out. I can't imagine Bosch is the guy to blow this thing up. So.
Right. We can safely assume that they're all opting out,
and then that makes it, interesting. There are reports LeBron wants a max, which would force the other two guys to take considerably less, although it's hard to really blame LeBron for wanting the max. And then it gets, I think whatever happens, you're going to end up with the three of them combined taking $45 million a year, give or take, and maybe a little more. But that's going to give, 10, depending on what they end up with, like $12 to $15 million for Pat Riley under the cap to go after free agents. And that gives them a lot of ability.
A lot more than they obviously had when they all opted in, if they were to all opt in. But how much more of a crutch, and I guess more so it's on Wade and Bosch. Like, the easy thing was to opt out. Now it's how much money are you really going to take? I can't see them get. See, here's the thing, though. As much as they have some sort of leverage, because I guess Chris Bosch, there are teams that would offer him max money, and Wade, I'm sure there was bad teams that would overpay him. The reality is that they did this to opt out. So how much leverage do they really have when going back to Pat Riley now?
Yeah, not a ton. I mean, I can't believe that this isn't coordinated, that they didn't, when they had lunch earlier in the week, I can't believe that these kind of things, numbers were not discussed about how they were going to go about it and how they were going to do it. There have been floated reports that they were all going to take $15 million a year. I don't know that Wade can take a 5-year deal just because of his age. But if you gave him 4, they'd all take that, and that would give Riley room, and they'd all take the same amount. There's other, if LeBron is pushing for the max and then those guys got to take a little less, so be it. Again, it's hard to begrudge LeBron that at this point in his career and what he means to that franchise. And so, the pressure would be on them to take considerably less. You've got to find a way with Wade. He was owed $41 million over the next two.
A lot of money.
It's too much for him now, but you've got to find a way to make this opt-out worth his while and give him 48 over 4, something like that, so that he's getting more guaranteed money. Or, they're all quote unquote, they're giving up money per year, but they're all going to do it with the expectation that they're going to get some kind of bonus for signing on long term. Bosch is kind of in the same boat. If he comes down to 15 but signs for 5 and 75, that's a lot more guaranteed money than he was going to make. So it'll just be interesting to see. LeBron, again, he can ask for the max. He's also the guy who least needs it. Like, his off the court income just dwarfs what he makes on the court. So.
Right. Which is going to be interesting to see how the numbers break down themselves. I would still think, even if LeBron gets maxed out, now, even if he gets maxed out and they agree to those terms, I would still think that he would try to do everything possible to have an out a year from now, at the very least, if not 2 years from now. So he's not stuck in Miami when Dwayne Wade is getting paid basically to be a player coach and Chris Bosh's skills have diminished.
Yeah, I don't know. My guess is it'll be like the last one. It'll be 5-year deal with a 3-year opt out again, something like that.
3 years, you think, LeBron, really?
Look, he likes it there. He's putting some trust in Pat Riley. And again, if they're doing all this to free up cap space, they're going to go, Kyle Lowry's a name you hear a lot. I don't know that they can get him, but there are quality guards out there on the market. Shooters like Steve Blake, Patty Mills is out there if you want to get him. Plus, they definitely need depth up front. They, because they're competing for a title and because they're, in Miami with the with the tax code that's in your favor and everything else, you can recruit for a little bit less, and you might be able to get, say, Marcin Gortat or Pau Gasol, to come there for a little bit less than they would take somewhere else and give you real quality depth up front.
You would have to ask these guys to take another pay cut as well. I mean, right? As far as
everybody's going to have to take a little bit less, basically. Okay. And, you know,
under the new
CBA, if you're really going to form a super team in some way, that look, Carmelo's going to find out the same thing. You kind of have to do that. You know, and I think that this is why Kyrie Irving will take the offer. Cleveland will come to him with a max deal. He will sign it, and he might get an opt-out or three or four, but you have to get on that cycle. You have to get some real paydays, and then you can worry about, you know, if you get big enough to be LeBron, then you can worry about taking less. Or in Bosch's case, he's very comfortable. He's made a lot of money. He's been a 20-10 guy. He's been to the All-Star game. He's done it all. Right now, he is very comfortable with who he is and where he is in his life.
Right.
And he doesn't want to shake that up, and lifestyle matters.
Yeah, he's been the one, you've said it here on the podcast, that he's been the one the most outspoken about doing whatever he can to stay in Miami with the team and also in South Beach. I will say this. I know there will be critics. There will be continued criticism of LeBron James for, especially if they win, with the bringing together a team with more and more guys, especially if they can get a guy like Gortat, or, you know, other guys who are names in the league. They may not be huge names, but there are names in the NBA, recognizable names in the NBA, to come play for you and take a pay cut on top of seeing Dwayne Wade, who clearly needs a pay cut, but will take one, and Chris Bosh, who's passing up a lot of money on the open market, and then LeBron maxes out. It's just fascinating to me that this is really about one thing and one thing only for everybody else not named LeBron, and that's playing with LeBron James.
Exactly. Yeah, he is the lure. Who wants to play with the best guy on the planet right now, and by the way, contend, you know, and with that, you get all sorts of interesting, you know, you get guys to take less and make sacrifices and do all sorts of things. Plus, they've built a good culture. It's an organization, like, people respect the Heat around the league in terms of players saying, hey, if I go there, you know, it's everything's done first class. This will be a well-run organization. And those kind of things matter as well.
You mentioned the CBA and just how eras change, how things have changed from a business standpoint. It's hard for me to think that, and again, I don't want to go off on a huge tangent here, but it's hard for me to think that if Michael Jordan was playing in a day like today where he could just get up and leave, and all of a sudden people had the ability to just get out there with contracts and be on the open market and gravitate. It may not be the next best player, but other guys in the NBA, I think, would be lining up at that point.
Exactly. It's impossible to compare eras. By the way, you know who the best one is? Charles Barkley is the king of this. Like, oh, yes. I can't, you know, he complains about it all the time. Deadspin had this great piece this week. I don't know if everybody out there saw it, but you can go look it up, about how he was really angry that he didn't get to go to the Houston Rockets with Olajuwon, that the league blew up this plan for him to form a super team, and he was livid at the time. But now it's, you know, it's a terrible idea.
Of course. It's a horrific idea right now. That's hilarious. I'll have to check that out. Kurt Hill at 8 Todd Shander. It's the PBT podcast, Pro Basketball Talk on NBCSports.com. If it were up to you, and Kyle Lowry, I think, is the odds-on favorite that everybody would want to come in. Let's say Lowry is priced out with the money that they have left over with all these contracts. Who do you think it could be? Somebody up front, down low? But I would think Lowry would be the top guy. After that, who jumps out to you that you think, you know what, this guy would step in and we're right back in the finals and winning, as opposed to, you know, where they were at the end of it?
You know, that's a good question. It kind of depends on exactly how free agency shakes out. And the thing is, it's going to take a little bit of time, just in the sense that the big three and for the Heat, you know, dominoes fall on these things. It kind of starts to set the market. So LeBron, and they will set whatever market they're going to set down in Miami. Until Carmelo signs and Love, if anything happens with Love, then everything else starts to shake out. You know, how much money Lance Stevenson gets paid, or how much money, I can't imagine the Heat going after him, by the way.
It would be a
mess. But I'd be curious to see who else they're going to try to go after. Cause I mean, they're not going to go after the biggest names. I don't think they can get Bledsoe. I don't think they can get guys like Monroe. But if you keep going down the list and you get to, like I said, I like Pau Gasol. Do they try to get Isaiah Thomas? I don't know that he really fits what they want. But Sean Livingston might. Mm. Paul Pierce is a name that got bounced around. It would fit right in with the kind of some of the things they do. Although the Clippers are supposed to want to go after him. Avery Bradley, Ray Allen. There's some interesting names out there. Sean Marion's a name I've heard as well. And that's a long defensive guy who can do what they want, you know, who can help go after that as well.
I don't know how much they're going to be able to address it, especially since the need at point guard. You mentioned depth up front as well, where it just replaying in my mind how old and decrepit and just broken down Dwayne Wade looks. And granted, if you have another guy in the backcourt, that can definitely help out a lot. But still, I would think that at the very least, depth at that two-guard position would be just a significant improvement just to be safe, because you know, how much are we going to get out of Wade next year, especially knowing what happened in the finals, that you want to save him even more minutes managing, games off, whatever it may be. Something needs to change. But just looking at him last year in the finals, I would think, I don't know how confident I am that just getting him back there is going to work.
Yeah, I know. You've got to have somebody with him. I don't know that they're going to be able to afford an Avery Bradley, but there are guys at Rodney Stuckey. Yeah. Be out there, who's an interesting fit. Like I said, PJ Tucker, who's more of a point, but you know, PJ Tucker's on the board. There's some interesting guys a little farther down the list. You know, Jared Bayless. You know, there's just some interesting names out there where they could get these kind of guys and make it work. You know, within their system, I think that they're pretty smart about those kind of guys. So Trevor Ariza's out there too, who would be a great fit for them, but I'm not sure if they can afford what he'll end up going for. And you know, he and Gortat are obviously the Wizards are desperately trying to keep those two.
All right. You mentioned as far as the market coming across and seeing how things fall into place. And now we know that the Miami Heat, this three right here, are going to set it, and we'll see how things fall after Melo with Love. But Melo, you guys said that on PBT that the Knicks were, you know, quietly confident that, you know, he's coming back. I don't think that this changes anything drastically, except that Carmelo Anthony now is the guy that will be, I believe, right back in the spotlight if it's Chicago, if it's Houston, and maybe somebody else coming in to try to woo him away. But the reality is that it's really these three teams, right?
Yeah, and there are other he's going to meet with the Lakers. I think that
I would love that.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a disaster on the court, but they're going to meet. He's already been, you know, he already spends his summer in his L.A. He can just drive in downtown, do a meeting, you know, drive into El Segundo where their offices are, do a meeting, and it's over.
What about the wife? Doesn't she want L.A.? I mean, I would think so, right?
I think that would be interesting. I think that part would be interesting. I don't know, though, that basketball, I mean, they can offer a lot of money, too, but if winning is really a priority, then that's, hey, I'm going to move to the West and play with an aging Kobe Bryant and Robert Sacre. You know, we're good now. So, with all respect to Julius Randle, I don't think that solves all their problems.
Sacre's not the lure like LeBron, I guess, huh?
Exactly. I don't think he's the mentor they want for Julius Randle either.
That's a fair point.
I think Dallas became more interesting by getting, hey, we've got Dirk, we've got Tyson Chandler back in the middle, who Carmelo's friends with. You know, they've got Monta Ellis. That's an interesting grouping. Houston's interesting. Like you and I think have discussed before, I think that's a bad fit for Carmelo just because defensively, geez.
Yeah.
Harden and Carmelo on the court at the same time is a bad idea. I still think Chicago's the best fit, but how much money is he willing to leave on the table? But that is ultimately, I think, why the Knicks are still confident, is that they're willing to go to the max or what, you know, they'd like him to take less, but they're willing to do this. And are you really going to leave $40 million and walk away from New York?
I think right now the plan to keep Melo in New York would be, if it were me or if in Chicago, I guess now you try to build something right away if you're Chicago and Houston. But from the Knicks standpoint, like most teams in the NBA, you can even look at the Philadelphia 76ers as far as their draft night strategy. Everybody's assuming that this big three in Miami is not going anywhere. And until LeBron, for the next 2 years, that this is going to be the team to beat, at least in the East. So you're building and building and you're building there. I would think for the Knicks standpoint, you just need to convince Melo that money you leave on the table is not worth sitting through a year where, let's be honest, what's the ceiling for them? 5 seed?
Yeah, exactly. They make the playoffs, but they're not going, I mean, because they're in the East. But
exactly. Only because they're in the East.
They're not going anywhere. I think I like everything actually Phil did on draft night. I think the trade to bring in, I think Jose Calderon's a nice fit, you know, more for the triangle just because he can shoot the ball. He doesn't defend better than you or I or anybody listening, but he's, you know, I think that there's a lot of, I like the structure and the places they're starting to go, but it's a process. Like you can trade Tyson Chandler because he still has some value. Amar'e Stoudemire and and Andrea Bargnani are much harder to move. Man, you've actually got to put sweeteners in to get somebody to take those guys.
Yeah, draft picks that you so covet, you'd have to give back up again. I mean, that's the cycle there. We could definitely trust that Phil is smarter than that. So it's really going to be, what, the summer of Melo and how soon Kevin Love gets traded.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and that is another thing that could certainly happen this summer. They're, you know, it becomes interesting. Does somebody up their offer? This happens to everyone. This is how people get overpaid. Is I struck out on Carmelo, I've got to find a way to get this other offer, and suddenly you're offering more. You know, does Houston strike out and start throwing, Chandler Parsons in a sign and trade to the Timberwolves, trying to get, you know, Kevin Love, and is that the start of something that actually works?
Houston would have to give somebody else up, though, wouldn't they, to keep Love?
It would have to be more than just that, but yeah, I mean, but you can start to work an interesting package together. I mean, Minnesota, you know, is going to get some nice pieces back out of this one way or another, as long as they don't wait too long.
Right, because at some point they're going to stink so bad that teams will just be like, all right, well, we'll just let this guy walk. You're not going to get anything back. The value,
there,
at least for the
return. There's a point of diminishing returns, but I still think, too, it gets done. Flip knows. I mean, it's leverage, and he might do this, but oh, what a circus training camp would be.
If he's there.
Yeah, if you bring Love in every day, it's just, you don't want that.
Yeah.
So I think he'd like to avoid that. He wasn't pressured to do anything on draft, you know, the night of the draft, because he thinks July 1 he can get a better offer, when he might be able, not even July 1, you know, like I said, a couple of people miss out on their first swings, and then they start going for something.
Yeah, not a good night for at least start of the night, at least there, when we heard Levine's response to getting drafted by Minnesota.
Yeah, we didn't run that video because we're a family-friendly site, but if you look it up online, you can see that Zach
F-bomb.
Levine, the UCLA guy who can basically leap out of the building, was not thrilled about going to Minnesota.
No, not at all. And you know why? It's just because he knows Kevin Love's gone. That's the only reason, is because he was so thrilled with the idea of playing with Kevin Love until he realized, wait, as soon as he heard his name, hold on a second, he's going to be out of here before camp. Yeah. So maybe it wasn't just, you know, the 15 months a year of brutally cold sub-zero winter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And trust me, is if you talk, especially if you, myself or other people who travel around the league, Minnesota, colder than Toronto, colder than Chicago in the winter. Like, nobody, it's freezing
it's
there.
Impossible.
It's impossible. Adjustment, man.
So the big thing on draft night is, as we kind of go into this here and melt into this here, obviously Thursday night, we knew it was going to be Wiggins, Parker, Wiggins, just a matter of which, especially Cleveland not trading out, all the rumors about Parker not wanting to play there. 1-2 fall into place. I think 3 was all the speculation about whether or not this is going to be a good move. And I think you nailed it perfectly. We talked about this on my show on NBC Sports Radio, the winners and losers column that you had on PBT, on Pro Basketball Talk, on NBCSports.com. It comes down to really a dichotomy, a split here. From a basketball business standpoint, what the 76ers did on draft night was great. But if you are a member of that fan base in Philly, and I think, to be fair, a lot of other cities, if this is the plan thrown out there, it's impossible to swallow, especially after what you went through last year.
Yeah, they're going to be terrible next year. And that's part of the plan. They're going to be bad, and they're going to get more draft picks, and they're going to, you know, eventually – they're going to have all these assets to cash in. In a couple of years, they could have some really nice pieces. But right, you know, you're selling hope, but it's going to be, you know, Embiid isn't going to play next year. And they've already saying 5 to 8 months. There's just no way. You know, you're going to have Michael Carter-Williams and Nerlens Noel and whatever they end up doing with Thaddeus Young. And it's just not going to be pretty. And then they're going to get another high draft pick, and they'll get whoever they get next year. Eventually, these assets will start, you know, Embiid will come and play, and all these guys will start, you know, Saric, the guy they got out of who everybody really likes, you know, kind of a point forward guy. All these guys come to fruition in a few years, and suddenly you're like, hey, this is a nice team. But it's 3 or 4 years before you really start to see that build. And so
and there's no guarantees.
But I'm not paying for season tickets next year.
No, not at all. And Philly, it's unfortunate because Philly has been, it's been so irrelevant, the Sixers team, on the larger sports scene down there since AI. But I think, unlike other cities that struggle with other sports markets in town, there is a strong fan base in Philly that really wants to see, and it's not just Sixers fans, I think it's just Philly fans that want to see this team relevant again. So I think it hurts even more because, you know, like you said, this team's going to tank again next year. Maybe they'll lose 30 in a row, but there's no guarantee. We don't even have a guarantee right now on Nerlens Noel.
No, not. Although he's playing in summer league, so hopefully we'll get to see him and, you know, we'll get to see him and we'll get to see that Brazilian guy that nobody knows that the Raptors drafted.
Thank you.
We'll get to see a few guys this year.
Thought I was the only one that had no idea who the hell that guy was.
I prep for that draft with we put together that running draft tracker thing where there's a paragraph on these guys. I put together about 70 of those. I put together so many trying to get it to work, trying to get, you know, so I've got enough. So I'm not kind of scrambling on draft night. And there's always a few. I mean, I put together 70 guys. I never even heard of this guy. I asked Ed Isaacson, our draft expert. And right. He's like, I put his name down as somebody I needed to look up for next year. Like nobody thought he was going this year. And so caught everybody off guard.
Besides that, I would think Embiid, if you don't get it from, I think the standalone aspect of, hey, this is going to be a long-term plan just because of the medical issues and the multiple injury. I think that was a surprise, although Philly going Dante Exum, I don't know how much better off they would be, especially with Michael Carter-Williams, that backcourt. Again, something that needs to pan out. That was big. Nick Stauskas was also a name that comes to mind, at least in the top 10 picks, where it was more than just an eyebrow that was raised.
Yeah, that was earlier than expected. And, you know, it's interesting also in that just that they have Ben McLemore, you know, and that's I'm a little confused as to why you kind of double up like that. But look, Stauskas, at the end of the day, I'm not as down on it as some people are with the Kings, only because shooters are good things to have. Like, it just, you can't have enough good shooters. So if this is Klay Thompson fell and when the Warriors grafted him, I'm like, a lot of people were like, I don't know. You know, he doesn't do that much. I'm like, he does one thing. He does it really well. If you can do that one thing really well, that's a valuable asset. And Stauskas is a little more athletic than some people realize. So I think he's going to be fine. I just think there's some odd pieces, and I think there's some future moves coming from the Kings just because I'm not quite sure how everything they've got fits together all that well.
Well, you mentioned shooting and being able to do that and do it really well. You can survive. And I don't think I was as shocked that Doug McDermott was drafted as high as he was, but the trade and what he commanded right after that, that kind of caught me by surprise.
Yeah. But you know what? I love the landing spot for him. I think as a stretch four in Chicago, I think I didn't put him on my winners list, but I think that that's a great spot for him. He's going to have to prove he can play a little defense to stay on the floor for Tom Thibodeau. But that said, I really like, you know, there's a lot to like there for him.
Mike Dunleavy's got to be out, right? Or they're trying desperately to move that contract, you would think?
He will be moved somewhere again, they're going to probably have to throw in a pick or something like that. But they're going to move something, yeah.
Bulls would look actually pretty good right now. You add a guy like Carmelo Anthony as well, all of a sudden?
Look, it's the Bulls. Yeah. Look, I don't think there's much question. If the Bulls add Carmelo Anthony, we'll see how the Heat shake out, but it's the Bulls and the Heat, and then maybe, you know, again,
we can't trust the Pacers, right? Trying
to pick what the Pacers are going to be, but you'll be right there.
I love what Boston did in the early round. I love what LA did as well. I think a lot of people, once we saw that, you know, I don't think anybody thought Julius Randle was going to be taken by the Celtics. So once Boston was on the clock, I think we started looking ahead, right, for the Lakers and seeing how Randle can fit in. And two teams, two big markets. It's always great. We always say this when it's Boston, New York, Chicago, LA, both LA teams now. But I think the Lakers and Celtics, this doesn't have to transfer into, you know, 60 wins next year and you're now at the top tier of the playoffs, but you got two young guys that I think will attract attention, and especially out in LA where you are, I think there's some expectation and excitement with Julius Randle in that fit.
Very much so, because he's a guy who can walk in and drop a double-double and next year, you know, he's somebody, there's questions about what his ceiling is, but I think, you know, we do this in every sport and in everything. We get enamored with the potential and we lose track of what is, and suddenly everybody's like, oh, I love what Aaron Gordon can be, and I love what Dante Exum can be, and you know, maybe those guys pan out, maybe they don't. Julius Randle is. Like, Julius Randle is a double-double machine. He's a beast on the boards. He's active inside. There's just so much to like about his game. And he's going to be a solid power. You know, he's not going to be elite, but he's going to be a solid power forward for the Lakers for a long time.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch next year because of Kobe. Just know how he is. And a rookie who has the talent, as you said, to step in and be an instant contributor. But all rookies grow. All rookies learn. There's a process with it. Guys in their fifth year sometimes are struggling to grasp it. So just to see how he picks it up and how Kobe is as a mentor, because I can say from the outside, it doesn't matter who it is, anybody coming into that dynamic, it just, and maybe this is the unfair reaction of how things ended with Dwight Howard, but it just seems like no matter who comes in there, Kobe is just going to be a mean son of a bitch until you get in line.
Exactly. And you know what, though? I will say this, too. If you're going to L.A. and trying to learn to be a professional, Kobe, in terms of prep, in terms of taking care of his body, and they still have Steve Nash, who, while his body is breaking down, you will not find a guy who works harder on his conditioning, works harder on his body. Is they're two very professional players to learn from. So it's in that sense, there's good role models, and you know, but it's good cop, bad cop.
Well, right. You're going to get guys at the end of their career who, let's be honest, are really cerebral in how they play. And a guy in Steve Nash plays that point guard position. We see point guards transfer into coaches. So you'd like to think that beyond what you'll get from who's the coach again? Beyond from you get when they fill in the blank, you really are. And it's true. I kid about Kobe and how rough he is on guys. But you bring up the more sound point, which is you have a rookie stepping in that's going to be learning from multiple coaches. And some of them, in case of these guys, MVPs with Nash, Hall of Fame with Kobe Bryant, you know, both of them, you're looking at that.
Yeah, exactly. It's an exciting place to go if you're a rookie, too. I mean, you get to go to L.A., you get to be in or Boston. You get to be in great cities and part of some of the big brands. I think that how could you not be excited? Like Clay Anthony early is lucked into a great spot. I mean, he's going to New York, yep, and he's going to do great.
How motivated do you think Boston is to move Rondo right now? I know that it's going to be difficult with those two guys in the backcourt, especially trying to get consistent offense, but you know, Smart looks like he can play some combo guard and maybe not as much pressure as you would initially think. As soon as they drafted Smart and Boss, okay, that means Rondo is immediately out.
Yeah, I don't think it's that fast, but I think it's a sign that that's the direction they're going, that their plan of bringing in Love or putting in all this talent around them, I think they're realizing that that's the long shot, and moving Rondo for pieces to rebuild is kind of the better way to go. And then you get your cap down, and look, they're one of those markets like Chicago, LA, New York, where they have the money and they have the prestige, and they can recruit free agents in a way other markets just cannot.
Did you see the Lance Stephenson meme is making its round now on the World Cup? I don't know how much of this you've even paying attention to.
I did not see that one yet.
Yeah. This is great. So Brazil, it's a penalty kicks with Brazil and Chile earlier. And a guy from Chile missed a clinching, what would have been a tying, and then forcing penalty kick. So now the Lance Stephenson blow memes are all over the place moving that thing. which still are better than the Luis Suarez bite memes, I think. As great as those are, I still think the NBA trumped the World Cup on that. We've got Lance and the blowing in the ear. They've got, you know, Luis biting. It's a close second.
By the way, there was a site that ran the math that was brilliant. You are actually more likely to be bitten by Luis Suarez than a shark.
That's hilarious. Three people on this planet actually have been, too. That is fantastic. I have to check that out. Do you remember the site?
Yes, but I will tell you off the air.
Okay, you got it.
I'm not going to repeat the name.
No problem.
If you Google that, you can find it.
You got it. All right, we'll be back later in the week again as we look ahead to what happens down in South Beach once the dominoes fall. And then, of course, Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Love. It's going to be a long summer. We'll be here at the Pro Basketball Talk for Kurt Heelan, Eitan Shander, pbt.nbcsports.com.